What are you sort of thinking of next? Are you going to be consulting? Or
I hope to be working closely with Northland College and the Tim Rolfe Alliance, and probably doing some occasional classes, and probably still doing some winter track surveys. I'm scheduled to assist with track training and Wolf Ecology classes this fall for people who are going to be doing track surveys. So still involved in some of those things.
So where is that held?
They're held across the state. There's on the Wisconsin DNR website, they've got a listing of all the training classes.
Take us back how this all started for you, because it wasn't wolves that you were first studying.
Right, yeah. Well, I've been interested in wolves for quite a ways back, from, I think, probably latter part of high school and early part of college. But I did my undergrad degree at UW-Stevens Point. My graduate degree, I studied elk in the Black Hills of South Dakota from Iowa State University. From there, I had odd jobs for a year until I had a job with Missouri Department of Conservation for about 2.5 years as an assistant wildlife manager, and then came to Wisconsin in 1982 and was a wildlife manager in three different locations for 8 years until 1990, and then I started working with the Wolf Program. It's something I was always interested in, but didn't have an opportunity until 1990 when this job came around.
So at that point, that was at the beginning of the work to restore the wolf pack to the proper spots in the state?
Well, they wolves start coming back in the mid-70s, and I was friend in college with Dick Thiel, who was doing a lot of work back in the 70s trying to determine if there were still wolves left in Wisconsin. Even in high school, he was interviewing and corresponding with wildlife biologists across northern Wisconsin, trying to learn if there might still be wolves around. And when he was an undergraduate, he was doing surveys for wolves in northern Wisconsin. I did a little bit of that, but not to the extent that Dick Thiel did. And then in 75, 76, we had our first wolves, and they were designated as an endangered species by the state that year. And in 79, the state hired Dick to be the first wolf biologist, and he did that for 10 years until 1989, when he left the program for another position, and then the position was opened up in 1990 for a new wolf biologist, and that's when I applied and was accepted.
So what was it about wolves early on that intrigued you?
I guess they're just this kind of big wild predator, and they kind of spoke of the wildness of the woods and of northern Wisconsin, and having them around just kind of made those places seem more wild, and they're just a fascinating, intriguing animal by themselves. And I think maybe sort of interest too is just the range of human attitudes toward them makes them sort of that much more interesting as well. Yeah, and one of my thoughts when I first accepted this position in 1990, I thought I was going to come up north and there'd be a lot of people who really hated wolves, and I'd be running into a lot of negative attitudes. And I was surprised I really didn't run into all that many in 1990. It seemed that the 10 years of wolf recovery efforts in the state and what had been done and the educational efforts of peoples were not that negative toward wolves.
So you were at that almost 25 years, right?
Well 1990 through 2013.
Right?
So 23 years I was in the wolf program, yeah.
So can you give a feel for what that restoration involved and what was learned and, you know, what went into that restoration?
Right from the start, getting good, sound biological information in the wolf population was essential, and that's why Dick Thiel was hired. And Dick had pretty much completed work on the first state recovery plan when I stepped in, so that was already in place, and that was sort of our guidelines for managing wolves. And what came out of that effort to develop a state recovery plan was that one of the most critical, important needs was just education, teaching people about wolves. And so one of the things that we did was we developed some educational organizations to assist the DNR. The Timberwolf Alliance was the first one, and a few years later, the Timberwolf Information Network. I think just education was seen right away as a very big part of the effort. And that still continues to be, because the most recent survey of wolves suggest that large number of people still are fearful of being in the woods because of wolves. And one of the things we had hoped to dispel is the myth that, that wolves were dangerous to people. Unfortunately, there have been a couple of deaths, two wolves in North America in the last 10 years. But those were pretty unusual circumstances. But those kind of things get a lot of publicity, and unfortunately, and then things such as the recent movie The Grey just reinforces kind of the negative, the myths about wolves. So there's kind of this ongoing effort to try to keep educating people about the really true nature of wolves.
Can you give us a sense for the way of wolf behavior, how the packs function?
Well, they're mostly shy animals. They're social animals. They live in groups. We call them packs. And a typical pack by midwinter in Wisconsin is only usually around four animals, the adult pair and there are a couple of their offspring from the either previous year or another year. They can be as large as up to 8 to 10 and sometimes as big as 12. And in other parts of North America, packs of 25, 30 wolves are occasionally recorded. But typically, they're not quite that large a group. But they are social animals. So they're born in a pack. They're raised in a pack. They stay in the pack until they're normally at least 1 year old. And most wolves, when they reach teenage years, which for wolves is when they're yearlings and two-year-olds, they leave their home territory and try to join a new pack or form a pack of their own. And after that, they probably remain in that pack for most of the rest of their lives. So most of their lives are spent living in packs. They still may travel by themselves at times, but they are a member of a pack. They are, during a short period of time, these lone wolves that are traveling by themselves, and that's usually in their pre-adult stage, late adolescent stage. And they occasionally will travel over large areas, and wolves will occasionally pop up in places we don't expect them to be as they're trying to find a home for themselves. But for the most part, they're very shy animals. They stick to heavy cover. They're mostly nocturnal or crepuscular, means they're active in the evening and early morning. They're hunters. They do live on meat in Wisconsin. That's white-tailed deer and beaver are probably the most important food items. Occasionally some snowshoe hares in our elk range in northwest Wisconsin. They do kill some elk occasionally as well. So it's usually the larger big game animals that are biggest part of their diet.
Is it correct that they tend to go after the elderly and the sickly in those groups?
Well, they go for whatever animal they can catch.
Okay.
And that most often will be very young animals or much older animals. Adult cows, middle-aged adult cow elk, are almost impervious to wolf predation. They're very good at avoiding wolves, except during one critical time period, and that's just when they're about ready to give birth or right after they've given birth. And a few years ago, we did have some cases where there were three cows killed by wolves just at the time they're birthing. And wolves are somehow able to find that one vulnerable time period in their annual cycle when they were able to kill the adult cows. But for most part, it is the older animals that they kill or very young animals. We did also find some years ago that they were killing a lot of two-year-old bulls. Bull elk, and at first that was a little bit of a mystery, but after thinking about it a little bit more, it made sense in that all elk are born into these large cow-calf herds that usually don't have adult bulls with them, but do have yearling bulls and sometimes two-year-old bulls who live with them. The adult bulls only hang out with the herds during the breeding season, but these young males are then born into these cow-calf herds, and when they reach about 2 years of age, they leave the cow-calf herds and roam about by themselves while they try to join up with these harem or these bull groups. While they're by themselves, before they've joined up with a group of other bulls, they are at this vulnerable stage, and that's when wolves were able to pick off some of these two-year-old bulls.
Give us a sense of the impact of wolf predation on the deer population over the years.
Well, for the most part, up until recent years, wolves probably had very minimal impact at least on any kind of regional or large basis, because the population was still quite small. In recent years, maybe they're having a bit of an impact on a localized basis, but the biggest factors that affect the deer herd are winters and our hunting harvest. That removes more deer than any wolves would do, those are the major limiting factors on the deer herd across northern Wisconsin. So wolves probably on a localized basis have some impact, that there might be a slight lowering of the deer population. And behaviorally, there may be some impact in that when wolves have established themselves, deer are going to be more elusive. They're sticking more close to cover. They're not coming out as readily during the daytime. So they're harder to see, which gives the impression there's a lot less deer, but in part they're just being much more secretive.
We talked earlier about human attitudes and that you were surprised there was more of an acceptance of wolves when you first went to northern Wisconsin. Is that changing, and in part because there are more people in northern Wisconsin than when you first arrived?
No, I think the changes are more to the increased number of wolves. I think the greater attention the wolves have gotten, but I think also part of it has been a frustration with this, the federal process of wolves being listed and delisted and relisted and delisted. And I think a feeling that wolves become kind of a symbol of federal authority that's constantly going back and forth. And I think there's sort of that resentment that's developed. And then I think there's been some new myths that have sort of developed over time that, people hear of dogs being killed and then are fearful of themselves walking in the woods and not recognizing that the situation under which dogs are killed is very different than just a person walking through the woods.
So explain that.
Well, the circumstances under which dogs are most likely to be killed is most often the hound hunting type dogs in July, August, when they're training on bears, or September, where they're hunting bears, and these dogs are often running at some great distance from the hunters, and the dogs are occasionally encountering wolves in places like their summer rendezvous sites, the place where they keep their pups, and wolves are going to be very defensive of their pups from any predator that gets close to their pups, so they'll be aggressive toward bears, toward coyotes, toward strange wolf packs that come too close to their pups, and they're treating hounds pretty much the way they're treating other strange wolf packs. So those are the circumstances under which dogs most likely to be attacked. There's been a few cases where dogs roaming near a house gets maybe attacked by a wolf, and that's perhaps another example of either territorial behavior, or in some extreme cases, if wolves are very hungry, they may attack a dog because they're hungry. But in general, wolves in Wisconsin have plenty of deer and other prey species, so attacking dogs for prey purposes is probably rare.
Would you share your position on the wolf's place on Wisconsin's landscape? And, you know, do you think there's a way of management that people wouldn't think about?
Sure. I think wolves are very appropriate in large wildland areas, and we've got plenty of those across northern Wisconsin and several places across central Wisconsin. In those places, I think wolves play an important ecological role as the apex predator, and I think those are places we want to encourage a healthy, thriving wolf population. There are other places where wolves are living close to livestock, close to the people, and there's going to be high levels of conflicts, and there I think we need to maintain stricter control on the wolf population. And there are places where wolves are probably totally inappropriate, urban areas, highly developed agricultural areas. It's probably okay an occasional disperser passes through that country, but it's not areas where we want to encourage or support wolf packs. So I think we kind of run the gamut in the state from areas that are highly suitable, where we want to encourage wolves, where we want to maintain healthy populations, to areas we want to maintain fairly strict control on the population.
So when you say strict control, one of the elements of management before that first hunt was launched was that farmers are owners of livestock, either their livestock had been killed or was threatened, that the, let's say the farmer, could kill that wolf, that that was appropriate, that was a measure that was implemented a few years ago, right?
Right, yeah. That's been part of our state delisting plan, that
right.
once wolves were off the federal endangered species list, it broadened opportunity for people to control wolves. There's combinations of federal trappers that are available to help trap and remove problem wolves, and landowners themselves would have permission to remove wolves. And under two circumstances, they can shoot wolves in the act of an attack immediately and just contact a warden within 24 hours. Or if they've had a history of depredation problems on their farm, they've had cattle killed or cattle harassed, they can be issued a permit so they can shoot any wolf coming on their property. And there were a handful of wolves that have been harvested that way, have been taken that way. And it seemed to be an effective way to give landowners control and remove wolves from areas where they're causing problems.
Do you think that that measure in itself could be the single most effective management tool?
I think the federal trappers is probably the most effective management tool. I think the landowner permit is probably a second one as far as removing wolves very specifically from the areas where they're causing problems. And in depredation management, we kind of look at things both from the standpoint of immediate controls and as well as proactive controls. And for the reactive type controls where you're trying to remove the specific individual wolf or the specific pack that's causing depredation. And for that, the most effective is allowing federal trappers to remove the animals or giving permission to the landowner. And probably a combination of those are good. In the case of more proactive controls, trying to reduce the presence of wolves near farmland areas or in areas of that we consider to be kind of unsuitable habitat, I think a hunting trapping season has a place there, and it can help reduce some of those conflicts. Public hunting and trapping is not going to remove necessarily the problem animals, but it can reduce the abundance or presence of wolves near areas where they're causing conflicts, and in that way reduce some of the conflicts.
So do you think that the current structure, the hunt that's coming up that's just about to start, that the harvest number, the zones, do you think that combination is on target?
Well, I think the current harvest, which is for 150 wolves this year, seems appropriate and suitable. And I think the zones that we've established so far seem to be working. My preference would have been to have had some more areas that were also close to harvest, and that wasn't an opportunity that was given the DNR to close certain areas to public harvest. We don't need to have all of northern Wisconsin harvest, and it would be nice to have had some closed areas around Indian reservations and around some of the large blocks of public lands like in the National Forest, where we don't really need to have a harvest to reduce conflicts. So some blend of open areas and closed areas would have been nice to have had in there. But in general, the current structure is not going to be endangering the population. And the current goal still is 350, and that's probably too low, but the DNR is re-examining that goal, and there will be public meetings held on a new wolf plan this next winter, and including examination whether that goal is still appropriate. The goal probably was appropriate back in the 1990s when we had less than 200 wolves in the state and it seemed like a level we wanted to achieve, but at this point where we've got 600-700 and that's our late winter count, it doubles into springtime, it's probably no longer appropriate to try to push it down to 350, but I think the number that are being harvested this next fall will not be bringing it that far down. It'll bring it down a little bit, and eventually at the kind of harvest levels that have been done in the last year or two, the population probably would stabilize at some level between 600-700 animals. The exact number of which it would stabilize, I guess we don't know, and that's not as important as just the fact that it does sort of stabilize, so we kind of know where we can plan to have wolves and where we're going to have them under better control.
So to that point of the spring population versus the winter, there's wolves that just don't make it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, naturally.
Well, the population probably nearly doubles because there's a lot of pups born in the springtime. Most packs will produce pups each year. Most packs have one breeding female, and normally each female has pups, but we find that only about a third of the pups survive to the end of their first year. So right there, you lose a lot of the pups each year. And normal mortality in adults, we lose about 25% of the adult population, or those wolves that are 1 year or older. So if you just do the math, you double a population, but you remove two-thirds of the pups from that population and a quarter of the adults, the population doesn't change all that drastically. It just slowly increases. And the harvest, more or less, is removing the additional increase, so it just kind of stabilizes the population.
Do we know yet what kind of impact the harvests are having to the packs themselves? In other words, depending on which member of the pack or, you know, members of the pack might be taken out in the harvest and what impact that has to that pack and then potentially others? Or is that an exaggeration on my part?
Well, we are seeing some impacts on packs, and that has been predicted. And in places where you don't want wolves or you want to keep the population under tight controls, you do want to somewhat disrupt pack structure because that's going to keep packs living there. In places where you want to maintain a healthy wolf population, we want to minimize disruption of pack structure. And we know, well, in the last couple of years, we've had some packs that have pretty much disappeared, but we still have new packs appearing on the landscape. So and that's been a process that's always occurred over time, is that some packs die out and some new packs are established and some packs that just go on existing for long periods of time. So we are seeing some of that occurring. That's appropriate in some places. In places where we want to maintain healthy wolf populations, there we want to try to minimize that. And that was part of the concept of the zone system, is to have zones where the harvest is at light levels to minimize disruption of packs in areas where we want to maintain a healthy wolf population, and in areas where we're trying to keep more control on the population, there we're allowing for a heavier harvest in part to disrupt that pack structure so it doesn't reestablish in those areas.
When you talk to other biologists and talk with the DNR about what ultimately will be that target population under the management plan, do you see it more as being somewhere in the 600 zone?
Just the modeling that we've done recently, looking at the kind of harvest of 150-some wolves, similar to what we were doing this year, that's where it kind of starts to level off, is around the 600 level. I guess my preference would be less of a focus on a specific number to try to achieve, but just maintain our 350 goal as our minimum level. We try to keep the population well above that level. If it's well above the level, the exact number doesn't really matter as much as if the conflicts are high, we need to reduce the population some. If the conflicts are low, we can kind of maintain the existing population as it is. So, or maybe even allow it to increase in some places. But more of a focus on the levels of conflicts that are occurring than trying to achieve some arbitrary number.
So in your years of tracking, there's also a season during which trackers and monitors might go out and howl. Could you explain that and how that resonates with your experience and the mystique of the wolf?
Yeah, I think one of the more exciting sort of surveys that we do are the summer howling surveys, where we go out and drive through the forest and stop every mile or two to get out of our vehicle and try to howl for wolves. And we walk maybe 100 feet or so from our vehicle, and then we do a series of howls. We start off with four or five quiet howls, and we listen. And if we get a response, we'll just note the time, location, directions, and all those things. If we don't, we'll do a second series of howls and do them as loud as we can. And again, if we get a response, we'll take down the data. And then we do a third series if we still haven't heard anything. But to be out there, to hear them howling back at you, and that you're sort of in this communication system with the wolves and under a beautiful summer starry sky, it's a Yeah, it's always a cool experience, and every time I hear them like that, it's like I'm hearing them the first time again.
So how does howling fit into the wolf behavior, into their lives?
Well, howling is part of their territorial behavior. They defend their territories by scent marking, by vocalizations, and by active aggression, and the howling kind of serves as a way to advertise their presence and that this is an occupied territory and please stay out of our territory. And they can project their voices up to 6 miles away, which would be about 115 square mile area. And the typical territory is about 40, 50 square miles. So the wolves on the landscape know where each other's territories are just from hearing them, the packs howling at night. And when we are doing a howling survey, we're basically being a single wolf traveling through another pack's territory and finding out if there's any other wolves around here, and they're responding back, say, yeah, there's wolves here, and please leave our territory. Or there might be a member of the opposite sex who's saying, I'm an available potential mate for you. Or so it is a communication system to find out if there are mates available and whether a territory is occupied.